In this second hour of Midday Friday, Baltimore Police Commissioner Anthony Batts joins us for the first time since April's rioting and the start of a surge of violence across the city, with two more homicides Thursday, including the shooting death of a 7-year-old boy. May is now the bloodiest month in Baltimore since August 1996. Among our questions for the commissioner, is the surge due to fewer arrests by officers worried, as their union president claims, about being arrested themselves in the wake of the Freddie Gray case? Commissioner Anthony Batts joins us for this second hour of Midday Friday after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our Friday show. Police Commissioner Anthony Batts on his way here to WYPR. We'll get a chance to ask him some questions. He's scheduled to be with us at about 1:20, so please stay tuned for that. Another programming note, Monday's show, because Martin O'Malley is expected to announce that he's running for president tomorrow at 10 a.m. During an event on Federal Hill. We'll be covering that, but also on Monday, talking about it again, because we'll have a chance to hear what O'Malley has to say, what sort of theme he sounds as he sets off to run for president for the Democratic nomination. So on Monday, we'll be talking about that with Fraser Smith, the senior news analyst here at WYPR, Barry Raskovar from Political Maryland, and Malia Cromer, who runs the Goucher Poll out at Goucher College. That's in our first hour on Monday. And in the second hour, Dr. John Smarr joins us again from Sinai Hospital. He's our Midday on Health contributor and a specialist in infectious diseases. On Monday, we'll be talking about Lyme disease and a new clinical study that's getting underway at Johns Hopkins. That's all on our Monday show. Today, in our first hour today, we've been talking with high school seniors from the class of 2015 about their hopes and dreams, what their high school experience was like, and where they're headed. Our last two guests for that have interned here at Midday just for the last few weeks in the spring as part of their senior year curriculums. Aaliyah Satterfield is a senior at the Park School, and she's planning on attending the American University in Paris in the fall, where she's going to study Russian. So we get to talk to Aaliyah about that. How you doing, Aaliyah? So we put you on the microphone instead of behind the glass in the control room today.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, okay. And Kaylee Saudek is with us. Kaylee Saudek is a senior at the Friends School here in Baltimore and will be a freshman at Williams College up in New England in September. Kaylee, how are you? Are you doing all right?
Yes, doing well.
I have enjoyed this program, getting to talk to high school students who don't get to do it very much. So, Aaliyah, I'll start with you. It's interesting to me, you chose to go to the American University in Paris. That sounds pretty exciting. So was that your number one school all along?
Yeah, it was. I was actually hoping to be able to apply to French schools. So I was looking at different branches of the Sorbonne and a couple of other places. But it ended up that the program that I had to use to apply, it wasn't the normal Common App program, and it was so incredibly complicated.
That to get into a French school?
No, to just like send them my materials.
Really?
That I had too many technical problems to do that. But I knew that I wanted to study abroad for all 4 years if I could.
Well, so it sounds like you want to be immersed in language.
Yeah.
How are you in French already?
I like to think I'm fluent. I'm definitely good enough to get around.
Because I wondered about that when it says here you want to study Russian. I would think you'd go to Paris to study, be immersed in French, but it sounds like you already have some command of that. So why Russian?
Well, so I wanted to study abroad so that I could get as many languages as possible, actually. So I'll be immersed in French in my time outside of classes, and I wanted to spend time with other things in classes. So Russian really appeals to me. It's, I think it's a really interesting language, and they've got a pretty good literature scene. Mm-hmm. So I have been reading poetry in the original Russian, and it's really, really cool, and I want to be able to do more of that. So,
has anybody had that conversation with you? Because we've talked about this on the show about liberal arts education and how more students and more parents, maybe more parents than students, want them to get focused on a career path, to look ahead to see, you know, what kind of jobs are there available coming on the line in the next 10, 20 years? Which ones are going to pay the best? Have you looked at any of that as part of your deliberations?
Well, I've been lying to people and telling them that I've got my heart set on being a translator, but in fact, I really haven't thought about that very much. I just really love languages, and I kind of want to learn as many as thoroughly as I can. But I definitely wouldn't mind being a translator.
Right. That'd be the practical application for it. But for now, you just want to learn. You want to immerse yourself in it. Well, that sounds great. What would you say about your experience at that private school out there in the Valley, Park School?
Yeah, Park has been great. I feel so lucky to have been there. The thing that really stands out about it for me is the faculty. I mean, it's a great curriculum and, you know, great facilities and everything, but the faculty are really just completely incredible, and that's been the most valuable part of my experience at Park. For sure.
Just great teachers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mentors.
Yeah.
They mentor
yeah,
you.
Yeah, certainly.
Took
yeah.
an interest in you.
Huh? Yeah.
That's so important. Kaylee Saudek at Friends School, a Quaker education at Friends School. Let me guess, is your family isn't Quaker, is it?
No.
What would you say about that, Kaylee? First, that's my first question to you, about that element of the education at Friends, you know, it being a Quaker school.
I think it definitely plays a role in our time at school. We have meeting for worship once or twice a week, which is kind of a time for the community to come together. And I think that's something that's really nice about going to a Quaker school, is just that little time in silence with all your peers and some of your faculty. And you kind of get to know what's going on in their lives outside of school, which has been really nice.
Yeah, you know, for someone who's never been to Quaker meeting, and I never went to one until a few years ago, it was pretty interesting. People sit very quietly, and if they want to say something, they say something.
Yes.
Sometimes there's someone who seems like a leader, but there really isn't. Am I correct?
Yes. Sometimes someone will stand up at the beginning and give a sort of query for the meeting, something to think about, something to stir conversation. But a lot of times people just sit in silence, and if they feel move to speak, they'll stand up and speak.
You're getting ready to graduate from Friends and then off to Williams College, a very nice private school in New England. What is your interest in studies?
I would say during my time at Friends, I've really enjoyed my math classes, and so that's something I'm interested in pursuing further at Williams, and maybe taking math to a more practical use in terms of like maybe studying economics or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And do you have an interest that you've identified in economics or in, I don't know, in life? It's something you sort of identified as a goal, an interest that you have that you want to focus on?
Not totally yet, but one thing that I am interested in is trying to create equal access to education for everyone.
Equal access to education?
Yes.
Tell me what you mean.
I feel very fortunate to have had some of the best education possible during my time growing up. And now I'm heading off to another great opportunity at Williams.
Elite private school.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited for that. And I feel as though I would like everyone to have that sort of opportunity that I have. But it's very difficult for people. A lot of times immigrants have trouble going. I mean, they can't apply to colleges, most colleges except for community colleges. That's the only ones that they can enroll in. And then financially, it's really difficult for a lot of kids to be able to gain access to higher education. And I think that's something that the United States needs to work on, because a lot of schools in Europe and outside of the United States, higher education is a lot less expensive and readily accessible to almost everyone there.
Hmm. That's interesting. So you think maybe down the road somewhere, after studying some more math and economics, maybe you can apply it to doing something about that for more access, especially for higher ed, for
mm-hmm.
people who are not being served by it now.
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
It's
and
a
I think
worthy ambition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you think about interning here at midday. What has that been like for you? What observations do you have about the operation here at WYPR? I'm curious.
It's been awesome. I mean, it's been a really great experience. I've loved working with Aaliyah and everyone here. It's been really fun.
You've been here at a pretty busy time, too. And yes. We've been focused on some pretty serious, heavy issues. And Aaliyah, I was wondering what you thought about your experience here during this time.
Yeah, I mean, everything's been really fun, obviously. But I felt so lucky to be here during the Freddie Gray stuff, actually, because just being around so many well-informed people and myself being much more well-informed than I would have been, I didn't understand how lucky I was until I was talking to some of my friends, and they just seemed so out of touch and upset and uncomfortable because they didn't, like, there was no truth really that they could understand. And obviously, you know, it's still questionable, you know, what the truth is, what mm-hmm. the capital T truth is. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed being here because I felt much more, you know, comfortable, not necessarily with what happened, but with what was being done to fix that.
Well, you learn something every day,
yeah.
right? You hopefully, I think that's why people tune in to
yeah.
public radio, with what we try to produce here, a show that provides you with something to learn each day. We're told that public radio listeners have a lifelong love of learning, and I hope we all do, right? So that's why they tune in. And so many different voices. People have so many different views on what's happened here in Baltimore City over the last just month or so. It seems longer than that. We're going to talk about it some more in a little while when Commissioner Batts gets here. So, Aaliyah Satterfield, we're going to miss you. You're going to go overseas. How do your parents feel about you going abroad for college?
I think they've warmed up to it now.
Yeah.
They're coming with me, actually, to hang out in Paris for a week for their anniversary. But after that, I'm never coming back, and they will never see me again.
Oh, probably. No, don't say that. Well, congratulations on getting through Park School and off to the American University in Paris, Aaliyah Satterfield.
Thank you.
And Kaylee Saudek, nice to have you with us here interning. Thank you both. This is your last day, right, Aaliyah?
Yeah,
and
day.
Kaylee, are you with us for a little while longer? Or?
Until next week.
Until next week.
Yes.
Well, thank you for being with us, and good luck to you at Williams College.
Thank you.
We'll take another break here on Midday Friday. When we get back, the Police Commissioner of Baltimore will be joining us, Anthony Batts. So if you have questions for him, you can give us a call. I'll give you the number now. It's 410-662-8780, or you can send an email with a question. I'll read those on the air, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Our phone number is 410-662-8780. If you have something to say to the Police Commissioner of Baltimore City, want to ask him a question, we appreciate getting your questions. And we appreciate Commissioner Anthony Batts being with us here today. Commissioner, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me here, Dan.
You know, this is the first time I've had a chance to talk to you since all this happened.
Yeah, it's been a couple months since we've been in.
April 27th, riots, and then this surge in violence across the city since then, and a lot of questions about what's going on. So any insight you can provide, for starters, about the violence? We've had surges before, but coming on the heels of the unrest and what we're hearing from the Fraternal Order of Police, Gene Ryan adding to this, the president of the FOP adding to this yesterday, the criminals are taking advantage of the situation in Baltimore since the unrest. Criminals feel empowered now. There is no respect. Police are under siege in every quarter. They are more afraid of going to jail for doing their jobs properly than they are of getting shot on duty. So your insights on that, please. First of all, your reaction to what the FOP president is saying there.
Well, I want to go even before that. You know, the last time I was here, and then we'll come forward and address the questions that you asked, we talked about what was going on in the community. And I think you have to put all of this in context, what's happening in the city of Baltimore. And I wanted to applaud you. There was a number of articles that you wrote, and I'm not saying that because I'm on your show, but I was very impressed by those articles that you put out talking about the issues that are out there, because there's not simple issues and there's not a simple fix to it. I was meeting with the Greater Baltimore group yesterday with a lot of business elite and CEOs, and we were having a conversation about the same thing that we're having here. And one of the things that I asked them is, are you guys open to having your next meeting in the Western District? Now, these are power elite guys who are corporations who are downtown. And basically what I was saying by asking that question, are you willing to get involved? There's people in districts in this city, and I've been saying this since day one when I came here. There's people that feel invisible out there in that community. They feel that they're invisible, their lives don't matter, and so that brings on rage, and rage is going on out there. So that's one piece that as we move forward, it's just not a police issue here. People want to make it into a very simplistic issue and says it's about the police. It's about much more than that. And one of the things that I learned living through the Rodney King riots is that that issue didn't take place on that day. It started 10, 15 years before. And so we've had an avalanche of issues taking place in the city that we haven't faced and we haven't talked about and we haven't dealt with. So that's job one that we have to start repairing. We on the police department on the front line, on the western and the eastern, in our western edge of our city, which is the northwest, western, and southwest, and then on the eastern district is where we're having more of the problems within the city as a whole. Not saying it's not other places, but those are the more problematic areas. The officers are, we have a new command in the Western who are going out, engaging in the community, contacting community, having conversations. I was in the Gilmore Homes on Saturday night out on patrol after going to roll call meetings and walking in Gilmore at 11 o'clock at night with the officers, engaging, connecting, talking. And the people there that I talked to said, we want the police officers in there. They said they were good people having good conversations. They want officers in there. They want stability. They want to go back to a sense of normalcy to take place. And my officers were initially just a little hesitant. But stay with me, Dan, because yep. I know you want to
Well, I wanted to ask you about the Greater Baltimore Committee. When you challenged them to have a meeting in the Western District, what was the response to that?
Overwhelmingly, yes, we'll do it. I think everybody in the city at this point in time understands the gravity of our situation. They were more than willing to make that happen and to get them in there. Because when you're dealing with the drug sales, really, that are taking place in multiple parts of our city, I think people feel disconnected, and not saying that this is right, but that those drug sales serve as an economy that takes place within that part of the city. If we're lucky enough to remove that economy, it has to be replaced with something. And so you're going to have those opportunities, businesses, and structure there to provide those. And so that's where the Greater Baltimore comes in. And since the day I was here, I was saying the way that we have to solve this problem has to be all of Baltimore coming together. It's not just going to be the police issues. But the deep-rooted issues that have been there for years have to be solved, and we have to deal with them on a big level.
Now, can I ask you back to Gene Ryan's statement?
That's where I was going.
Okay. Is he blowing smoke, or is this something that's really happening?
Well, away from what Gene's statement is, yesterday I had a meeting, and I've been having multiple meetings almost daily with my officers in small groups and large groups, listening, hearing them. And I had a group yesterday, and I brought in an outside proctor to proctor this meeting. I had about 20 to 25 officers, and probably one of the best meetings I've had in a long time. And the officers were very raw. They were very real. They shared what they thought, what they believed, and what they felt. And they said they have said things, maybe not in the same way Gene was saying, but officers kind of colored a picture throughout the city in different parts where they will get out of the car and someone will invade their space, come too close, challenge them, wanting them to overreact. And they're not overreacting, and they understand what's happening. But they want the answer, and they want an answer from me, and they want an answer from the state's attorney. Can I take action? And if I take action, will I be supported in the action I take if it's a legal action and done the right way? And I share with them is that that's what I expect them to do, is that if someone breaks the law, you have the right and ability and you should enforce that law. And sometimes we use force, and that's why we're law enforcement. And sometimes it doesn't look pretty when we use force, but that's what we get paid to do. So my expectations is to keep the city safe. My expectations is to avoid having 7-year-olds and 9-year-olds shot in our city. My expectation is for us to engage, but they need to know that. And I also, for the last week, I've been trying, and it came to fruition today, to get the state's attorney over to the police department to have a conversation with our command staff to clarify some questions. And that meeting happened a day from 10 a.m. to about 11:30 noon.
Clarify questions about what?
These questions that are being asked here, where the officers say, if I take action,
okay.
Will I be okay? Will I go home to my family? Or if I make a mistake from their statement, will I be arrested for making a simple mistake out of the good faith along those lines? But that meeting went very well.
But Commissioner, that's a meeting with a small group, right? How do you get this message out through the rank and file?
Well, we had to start with this group today was about 40. It was our homicide guys, our FIT team, my entire command staff from captains and above. We had to start with a group here. And that is having an understanding. And that meeting was very raw also. There was very tough questions that were asked. The state's attorney answered them all openly, she and her staff. There were scenarios, case studies that were put out, and guys were asking tough questions from the officer standpoint. And I think we had a breakthrough. And what came out of that is that the state's attorney, I won't put words in her mouth, but she's willing to have those meetings and have those conversations in a short amount of time now because we have the sense of urgency that they need to have these answers.
Since you came on as commissioner, we've seen other spikes in violence over a weekend, over a week's period that you've had to deal with, even though, you know, overall the numbers were coming down and then we've seen these spikes. But what makes this one different? Is it because of the association it has with the Freddie Gray case? Is it because of this assumption people are making that officers are reluctant to carry out their duties in a, to the full extent so that they can actually intervene, prevent some killings?
Yeah, well, the same thing I asked my guys yesterday. I go, what are you guys feeling? You know, tell me the real deal here. And it's not just one issue. The issue that we talked about being supported, knowing if they have good faith in what they're doing and do it the correct way. That they'll be okay. And in this meeting today, we talked about making sure that you have to articulate your reasonable suspicion. You have to articulate why you have probable cause. And we share that and we start building and training too that we're going forth to make sure that officers are trained, realigning our training to bring the state's attorney in to do the training now. Before that hadn't been the case, we were doing it with the solicitor's office. So we're correcting all those things immediately right now. But I think it's all those things. I think the community and some of these neighborhoods do feel emboldened. And some of the young people, what my officers feel from their standpoint, is that because you had this civil unrest, is that the young people are being told they're responsible for this civil unrest. That because they did such and such, they had this impact. And the concern from the officers are as what are we going to do as a community as we go into the summer if they feel young people feel emboldened this way? And I think it's always okay from an American standpoint to do protests, but you also have to put that in an American city. You have to put that in a progressive, functional manner and way. And so the officers are not only talking about can I arrest, but what are the people telling the young people? How do the young people see their role within the city of Baltimore? And then the gangs, they say themselves. So a lot of this violence in our city is not random violence and people just getting shot. When we had the riots itself, within that seven-day period, we had 9 homicides that were in the western part of the city. That wasn't random homicides. That was tied to traditional historic violence and connections. We had 5 people shot the week before last over off of Monument in the Kenwood area. Those players were traditional gang rivalries that have been quiet for a while, but they flared back up. This poor young boy, 9 years old, who was shot while playing basketball on Memorial Day, that came from one potential person that may have criminal connections shooting at another potential person that had criminal connections, and the baby got hit because he's playing basketball in the street.
A question about this. It's been suggested that during the looting that occurred on April 27th, that it hit some pharmacies, and that painkillers.
17 pharmacies were
17.
Were hit.
Yeah, and that those drugs went into the market here in Baltimore, the illicit market, and upset the illicit market and caused turf rivalries, tensions that might have resulted in gunfire. Does your intelligence tell you that that could be an ingredient?
Some of those points, not how you put them. We were very much aware that day that 17 pharmacies were hit. That wasn't out of happenstance either. And when people were asking, were there criminals involved, that's criminal activity. They hit those pharmacies purposefully. They also went after pawn shops that we were aware of, and we got on top of those shops that had guns in them. So we made sure that we locked those particular places down, if I can talk. Mm-hmm. A little tired. We have worked very closely with the Drug Enforcement Administration almost immediately because we were aware of those. We have active investigations going on now, and I think in a short amount of time, you'll probably start seeing some arrests that have come out of that. We have already done 8 arrests, and we have about 8 open warrants that are pending right now. But I think you're going to start seeing a number of arrests, not only with the looting of those pharmacies, but the rock throwers, the other looting of just normal stores. We have pictures on that. I have a major task force focused on both of those different things.
We'll take a break here. Commissioner Anthony Batts is with us in this hour of midday. You're welcome to ask a question at 410-662-8780. We have several questions for the commissioner by email that I'll read after this short break. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here on WYPR with Commissioner Anthony Batts of Baltimore. So here's an email, Commissioner, that it speaks to this issue of police response. So I'll let you address it. John writes in to say, I was just with a city firefighter who said he is going on 911 calls, 911 calls, and no police are responding. It's not a rumor. It's a reality that the fire department has to deal with. What does the commissioner have to say to that? You know, and there's been other anecdotal evidence, if you want to call it, or anecdotes passed along to me, people saying, you know, I drove around this street and that street today and I didn't see a single police officer. It may be what's always happened in that particular neighborhood over time, but people are more focused on it now because of the shootings and killings.
There's a couple things that have gone on in recent, and not to make excuses for that because I'm not. And my officers, myself, and everybody in this organization have an ethical standard and responsibility when we pin this badge on and the shoulder patches and these guns to protect the city, period, bottom line. We also have to take into account what their concerns are and make sure that we address their concerns, their needs. And they have realistic questions here, and those questions need to be answered. And that's part of my calling in the state's attorney. So we had to get those answers, and we still have to get those answers. We got to make sure that the training is still online so they feel comfortable with that training to do the job that we're doing in a short amount of time. But my expectations of them handling the calls is I have no waiver there. We have a responsibility to get the job done. We also hold our guys accountable, too. If we find officers who are not doing the job appropriately, then we have to address that in ways, but we also have to answer their questions. We doubled up officers over the last couple of weeks. We were putting 2 in a car. Here in Baltimore, heavily the tradition has been 1 officer in a car. So where you would have, let's say, hypothetically 16 units that were out, so when we were doubling up, you had 8 units that were out there handling the same amount of calls. But then that goes back to how the officers were saying people were getting in their face and they needed more than 1 officer to address those things. So some of that is happening also. So I was out and I've been out on the street multiple nights. I was out on Saturday night checking in all parts of the city. And I saw officers moving pretty fast, getting the calls, addressing, doing the things they needed to do. We had 1 shooting, unfortunately, over in the Eastern. We had a female officer that just did a dynamite job. She got on the scene extremely quickly, and she got out, and the backup units came. I was in the Western checking on calls, and guys didn't know I was rolling to those calls. And those officers were out there showing up and doing the job and function. Do they have angst? Of course they have angst, and I'm gonna be very straightforward with that. And we are solving those angst to make sure that we clear those barriers out of their way.
Here's some comments for you from Charles, homeowner here in Baltimore City. He says, I would like to address the recent reports that the BPD officers are now more afraid of being arrested for doing their job than getting shot. And that is a proximate cause of the recent uptick in violence in the city. My perception is that police officers and their unions are playing political games over the arrest of 6 officers who, guilty or not, are connected with a death. I was proud of the Baltimore Police Department following the riots. I think they stood firm, represented themselves well, and did a good job of mitigating the damage from the unrest, all within the bounds of the law.
Dan, can I say something, too? My guys are good. My guys are good. They're solid. They're courageous. You saw them stand tall in times that they're needed. I've shared with you that I've seen these guys out here working, doing their jobs. I'm proud of them. I'm proud that they risked their lives. I'm proud of the fact that they risked their family's safety to do their job and stand tall. I think we also have to take a moment and a second to appreciate them, and that we need to say it. You know, these guys pick up the newspaper daily. They get beat down. They get crushed for any and everything that they do and the tough jobs that they're out there doing. So I think maybe we take a second and applaud them for the job that they do. I expect them to get to calls. I expect them to keep this community safe. But I also would like, and I ask, that we tell them that we appreciate the job that they do, and that they are doing the job appropriately, right, and constitutionally many times.
A question for you that's based on a Baltimore Sun story. Commissioner Batts apologizes to Baltimore officers at union meeting, a story that was published a couple days ago, where it's reported that you said that you had failed to follow your intuition that problems were coming and that officers could get hurt as a result and did get hurt as a result. Do you want to address that?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things is my guys are feeling very vulnerable, and it was important for me to be vulnerable to them too, and that's part of leadership, to let them understand that I know what they're feeling, and everything doesn't always go right for anyone at any given point in time. When I came into the organization 2.5 years ago, the training was horrible, and it wasn't because previous administrations hadn't done everything that they needed to do. But things had fallen off, and what my focus was is to make sure that when we stop people, that we do training on stops. We did a lot of training, put a lot of time to car stops. That's where you have a lot of officer-involved shootings. We put a tremendous amount of time to foot pursuits. That's where you have a lot of officer-involved shootings. My guys did not have, for whatever reason, the latest progressive way to do active shooters. If you have somebody in a school in the middle of daytime or business shooting, some of my new commanders or supervisors were handling that like we did in 1994. And so I thought that was important to bring that up to speed and to address that. We had a lady who was shot in the Western about 2 years ago, and she laid out her, and unfortunately it was one of our own employees who had shot his mate, and she laid out there on that sidewalk for about an hour and a half because our guys didn't respond because they didn't have the appropriate equipment. So I needed to solve that. We have done a lot of tremendous training, and I had to prioritize what that training was. And when I say I didn't follow through with my initiative, unfortunately, I've been in pretty close to about 8 different riots and crowd control situations. My first was Rodney King in the early 1990s, where Los Angeles was on fire and the city I was in, Long Beach, was on fire too, and went through soccer riots in Southern California. And when I went to Oakland, I was called in because a police officer had shot a young man at Fruitvale Station, and we had 4 riots up there, 2 large, 2 small. And so I come from an area where we have those, so my intuition when I hit the ground is we got to get this online and get it online first. But what I was told by command staff people here is we haven't had a riot here in 40 years. And so I put my priority very heavily to officer-involved shootings, excessive force, citizen complaints, things that impact citizens on a regular day, safety of kids in school with active shooters, making sure that we were sharp when we were online with that. So I had to make a decision on priorities. Although I come from riot-related situations, even in the 2.5 years I've been here, it's been more crowd control. It hasn't been aggressive. And the reason that we had the aggressiveness now, we had a lot of people come from out of town here. We had people that came from Ferguson. We had the Black Panther movement that came here. We had anarchists that came here, and those are Northern California-type groups who are extremely sophisticated. We had anonymous that were here. So most likely, if we had the normal Baltimore crowd that was here, we wouldn't have had the incidents that we had. These were not normal Baltimore crowds that came here that did the impact. If people want to be angry, we need to be angry at the people not only shooting out there to put the blame on them, but the people who caused the issues within our city. That's where the blame needs to be.
So you say you didn't follow your intuition on that day. Are you?
I'm talking about I didn't follow the intuition of coming from riot and crowd control.
Oh, I appreciate the background, but when you get to April 25th, 26th, 27th, are you telling the officers, are you admitting that you could have done more to have them prepared for this?
Well, I think I'm saying the same thing. I'm saying if we had done, there's different types of psychologies that goes on with crowds, and you have different types of crowds. We got applauded in November and December. We had about 12 different marches. Those were in reference to Ferguson. And Eric Garner, too. Yes, yeah. And the media applauded the fact that we didn't arrest people, and we had 12 difference. In the other cities, you had 200 arrests that took place on that day. And so that had a lot of mothers, they had a lot of baby carriages, that had a lot of people in those different marches. So that you handled that type of march in a different way, although they sat down in the middle of intersections to impact intersections. When you have a crowd that we encountered on that Monday, that's mobile field force. So our guys have been trained with the basic of incident command. That's how you handle a long, sustainable issue like that. Our guys have been trained on crowd control. Well, we didn't put as much time in, but we started in November, December. We didn't get all the way through and enough people trained on mobile field force. And that's when you have to take on aggressive crowds.
Let's take a couple of calls for Commissioner Anthony Batts. We'll start with Justin in Baltimore. Justin, welcome to the show. Go right ahead with your question, please. Justin, are you there? All right, we'll move on to Elder Owens, who's giving us a ring with a question for Commissioner Batts. Go right ahead, please.
How are you, sir?
Okay.
Commissioner Batts, if you remember, I'm Ron Owens. I'm the guy who organized your meeting with the Gang of Nine at New Shiloh.
Yes, sir. How are you doing, sir?
So,
Elder Owens.
Very well. Let me first do this before I say this. I want to commend you because I think, as Dante Hickman said, you're coming in to solve a distorted problem, and you've done a good job.
Thank you, sir.
Now I'm asking you not to back down and let up. At the end of the day, it is unethical for whatever your reasons and for whatever your officers' reasons are not to safeguard and appropriately supervise our community. If you are going to remain having support from the community, it means that you told the same integrous and genuine line that you have been towing. And this is the other question that I'm off the phone. I looked at you all's budget, and you have not increased the line item on police community enforcement stuff, having more officers assigned to build relationships with the community. But please don't. You'll lose the one base of support you have, that Gang of Nine, if you back down unethically just to build morale.
Sir, I would never back down. I only know one speed and one direction, and that's serving my community in the way that my community wants, in a constitutional way. I share with the officers daily to remind them back to their value system of why they put that gun on every day, why we put this uniform, why we put this badge on, and the men and women who have died before us keeping this city safe. That is our responsibility. That's what we're here to do. And I have very good officers that do very good jobs, and I'm very proud of them. And we are seeing these guys engage, and I stand here and tell you that I don't back down. I will continue to do what I do, and that's why I'm out on the streets leading my guys. And if it takes me getting in the cars with them, if it takes me being vulnerable, if it takes me to do whatever I need to do to lead these guys properly, we'll get that done.
There's a question that takes us back to April 27th from Michael, Commissioner. What contingencies were put in place to transport students from Frederick Douglass High School and City College when the police decided to close the Mondawmin Transit Center on the basis of a Instagram meme on April 27th.
That's a longer discussion. And what I did not share on the front end, and I'll go to that Monday, is we started preparing for this 7 days in advance. And I told you this is about the eighth crowd control or riot or civil unrest that you would say I've been in, so this is not my first time dealing with these. And so as we started to prepare 7 days in advance, we started calling in other resources throughout the state of Maryland. And how I've dealt with these things prior is that if you have a crowd of 200, you have to have double the size of police officers. So you have to have 400, 500 police officers. You have to double it because it's a battle of attrition because you have large groups that will splinter off and try to thin you out. So we did the hue and cry to the entire state of Maryland 7 days before. We cut off all vacations, all days off within the Baltimore Police Department. We were able to bring online 30 police officers out there, 1,000 police officers out there in the field. Throughout the entire state of Maryland, we were only able to get 200. Now, we were looking for a total complement of 2,500 police officers that we were planning to have a crowd anywhere from 800 to 1,000 to 1,500. So we needed to have another 1,000 to 500 police officers from the state of Maryland itself. We were able to get 200. We went in several days later and called an emergency meeting of chiefs throughout the state as a whole. When we had that meeting, we kind of said, hey, this is a serious thing. We're not playing. We're bringing everybody online. We're bringing all of our resources that we can get here and muster online now. We need your assistance and help. And they gave us assistance, but the numbers only got up to 200. And we still didn't get those numbers. So that's how we went into this position to address this. In the heat on that Monday taking place, I was making calls to Kathy Lanier at D.C., and I said, Kathy, we need resources. We were able to get only 200 from the state. I need D.C. guys coming. I called Chuck Ramsey in Philadelphia and said, Chuck, I need resources coming here. Called Bill Bratton in New York, and I said, I need resources down here. I need more bodies than what we have here, more than 200. And they said that we have to go through the state. The only way that we can come from out of state into your state is to have officers deputized, and only the state can do that. So we had to walk through that process to make that happen. When we had Monday at Mundaman, we had gotten a email or social media that kids were going to do a purge. And familiar with the movie Purge 1 and Purge 2. We put a heavy number of officers up there, keeping in mind we had 1,200. We not only had to hold Mundaman, which is a problematic, we had the Lexington Market, we had the downtown corridor that was there, we had the Eastern that suffered, other Monument Street corridor. So we had a lot of different pieces within the city that we had to cover. So we put multiple platoons out there. Platoons are groupings of 25 or more. So we had multiple platoons on Monument, pretty close to 200 to 300 officers. Now, what we do know is that Mundaman is a daily issue for us every single day. It's a drop-off point for 8 different schools, and every single day we put tons of resources between school police, MTA, and the Baltimore Police Department every single school day that takes place. We do not have staggered times that are out there. So when this thing started taking place at Mundaman, we had kids come off the schools that were adjacent around the corner from Mundaman. And when that took place, officers moved into position to address the threat, the rock throwing, the things that the young people were doing out there. Just by the sheer fact that, and then officers called for additional resources. Just by the sheer fact that we had other officers responding and cars were being parked and officers were engaging, we were blocking traffic. So part of that issue was that comes from the MTA, but part of it was our response to the location and having hundreds of more officers come to that location blocking up traffic. And so the buses, when I saw, and I was initially up there, what I saw is buses were just stopping. And instead of taking kids around, they just started dumping kids off. And so you had kids all over the place that were roaming around. That wasn't just not pre-planning. That was pre-planning, but those obstacles just took place.
So then the decision was made to shut it down.
I don't think I don't know if the decision was made to shut it down. I don't recall that came from my command staff at all. But what I did see is by the sheer fact that we had police cars blocking the street, we stopped buses from coming and going, because buses would have rolled into the middle of those rocks being thrown, the bricks being thrown, and all the activity taking place. So to a part, the decision was a sound decision, because you can't have people rolling, normal people rolling right in the middle of where you're having rocks, bottles, sticks, and other things taking place.
Okay, I understand that. But, you know, we got the word, I don't know who the one person was who pushed the button and said, shut it down. This question has come up on the show a couple of times.
Well, the possibility is that somebody possibly could have done that. When they're out there, those commanders are autonomous. They don't have to get an okay coming up and down the chain of command. If they want to make that call and they see that there's an emergency out there, they get to make that call. And if they're making it to make sure that everybody's safe, I applaud them. I expect my command to make independent decisions out there.
Let's go to another call then on another subject. Well, back to one that was just mentioned here by the commissioner. Hilda, go right ahead with your question.
Yes, I've been through the, if you remember, the Resurrection City. We had no trouble in my town at all until people came in from out of town. There were no problems. They were marching, but no, they weren't violent in Baltimore until people came in out of town. It got much worse. I helped finance a family to go out there and work. It got much worse out in Ferguson when the people came in out of town. Why can't they stop that happening? And we would save a lot of problems and a lot of life, and I thank you.
How do you keep, if you're concerned about outside agitators, outside groups, how do you keep them out?
Well, part of what I did in this particular situation, I made it clear that we had outside groups coming into the city. And the significance of these outside groups, these are not just normal people who want to protest. These are serious people. These are people who travel from Ferguson, who purposely stir up trouble and stir up rioting, to South Carolina, to Sanford, where Trayvon Martin. These people are serious. They're coming here to make this happen. And so what we were doing was putting that out pretty clearly to the community. And what I have to say is that a lot of community members behind the scene, they started to catch on it pretty quick, and they started pushing these guys out because that event that took place on Monday just didn't happen. There were some things that were taking place, and from me seeing anarchists and other Black Panthers in other positions, there were tactics used out there that normal kids just did not pick up on. These guys, when they came into this city, dramatically impacted the conclusion what took place. These guys, we need to make the community aware, and those that we know are problematic, in the future, we're going to let them know because that's how serious they are.
A quick question from Noah in East Baltimore. How does the commissioner intend to change police culture in order to improve community relations and be more transparent?
We have already started. The day that I walked in, we started changing police culture. And one of the things that you guys don't put out a lot, and I think it would have helped before we got all this flamed up, is even Mark Puente's story that he put out on the lawsuits. Kind of help fan the fire. Now, you have a right and you should share with the community what's going on and issues taking place. But what we didn't do a really good job of from our media standpoint is sharing that those cases were from 2007 to 2011. When I talked to or spoke to learned people within the community, I said, did you read into those stories that these things were not happening today? And they said, no, I thought this was going on today. So those stories kind of flared this community. It got this community up. And if we had made it clear that those cases actually took place under 2007, 2011, from a group of officers that I disbanded when I walked in. A lot of those things came out from the Jump Out Boys, the VSET unit, and in the first months I came in.
The point was made here, Commissioner. I mean, well, the mayor was on the show and made that point with
but that
me.
But that point didn't get across
Freddie
to
Gray, him. But Freddie Gray didn't occur
but
during
me,
that
let,
period.
But let me finish.
Yeah.
Is that point did not get across to the – when you talk to learned people and say, did you get that? They said, no, they did not get it, and we didn't make it clear. But that helped to fan the fires within the city as a whole. And you have a right to get information out. But right now, today, not looking back, but today – we have the opportunity to do exposés that are learned, that share how we can change the city and how other cities can change. Instead of playing gotcha games and pointing fingers at each other and scapegoating, this is our opportunity. This is the opportunity we need people to be passionate about changing the city and changing this department right now. This is the opportunity.
Commissioner, thanks for being here today, and please come back again.
Are you kicking me off now?
We're done. We're out of time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we have to move, but thank you very much for being here. Anthony Batts, Police Commissioner of Baltimore City. I'll say the questions that came in, we didn't get a chance to ask on the air, and forward them to the Commissioner's office and see if we get responses for you.
Thank
you very
sir.
Much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our Midday Friday. We'll be back again on Monday, and have a great weekend.